Welcome to tonight's Molloy program. Happy winter solstice. We are going to have our party on Thursday evening, but in celebration of that event, that celestial event. But tonight is the solstice, so we wanted to focus a bit on that, if you don't mind. Oh, by the way, the first hour is sponsored by George Piter. Is it Piter? George Piter? He writes, Happy Solstice, America, from George and Karen in Oregon. A special hello from your most loyal four-legged fan, Maggie, the world-famous therapy cat? Really? George and Karen in Oregon are sponsoring this first hour. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. A bit of the hardcore history first, and then I want to share with you a piece that Bridget at FairyWoodland.com has written. According to the vast Molloy Research Department, we found out that the solstice itself may have been a special moment of the annual cycle of the year, even during Neolithic times. We're talking 9,000 years before the Common Era. 11,000 years ago, towards the end of the Stone Age. That's how ancient the cultural anthropologists or the geologists or whomever think this this celebration is. 9,000 years BCE. Astronomical events in ancient times controlled all sorts of things to the people who lived then. And the celebration or the fear generated around this time of year show how various cultural mythologies and traditions arose. This is attested to by physical remains in the layouts of the late Neolithic and Bronze Age archaeological sites like Stonehenge in Britain, Newgrange in Ireland. The primary axes of both of these monuments seem to have been carefully aligned on a sight line pointing to the winter solstice sunrise. That would be in the Irish archaeological site. And the winter solstice sunset at Stonehenge. The winter solstice may have been immensely important because communities were not certain of living through the winter and had to be prepared during the previous 9 months. Starvation was common in winter between January and April. Those months were also known as the famine months. In temperate climates, the midwinter festival was the last feast celebration before deep winter began. And at that time, cattle were slaughtered. Most of the cattle that were owned by the people. I don't want to call them farmers. I guess some of them were. But they were slaughtered so they would not have to be fed during the winter. So it was almost the only time of year when a supply of fresh meat was available. And the majority of the wine and beer that was made during the year, during the summer, was finally fermented and ready for drinking at this time. Since the event, the winter solstice, is seen as the reversal of the sun's ebbing presence in the sky, the sun's getting further and further closer to the horizon, does not seem to reach the apex of the sky like it does during the summer months. So the solstice was seen as the reversal of that. And because of that, concepts of the birth or rebirth of sun gods, sun, spell S-O-N or S-U-N any way that you want to, sun gods, they've been common. And in cultures using winter, based, solstice-based cyclical calendars, the year as reborn has been celebrated with regard to life, death, rebirth deities, like the Christ, or new beginnings, such as cleaning traditions were established. In Greek mythology, the gods and goddesses met on the winter and summer solstice, and Hades is permitted to enter Mount Olympus, you know, where he normally lives. Also, reversal is another usual theme, as in Saturnalia's slave and master reversals, the ancient Roman tradition. So, this is a pretty ancient festival, and of course, we have gotten completely away from it. It would probably be safe to say that maybe 0.1% of the population of the United States has any concept of, or any knowledge of these ancient traditions. I just wonder how many people who sang the now referred to Christmas carol, Deck the Halls, are aware that every single symbol in that song is pagan and is about the false and merry hope that the sun can be enticed to come back. You know, when you listen to the words of Deck the Halls, there is no religious allegory at all or religious references in there at all. It's all about, hey, let's dance and have a good time. Quick, 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 build the fires. Come on. Fast away the old year passes. Come on, ye lads and lasses. Let's dance, sing something. Let's party, quick. In the late 7th century in Japan, the festival there was Amaterasu. Is that it? Amaterasu. The festivities were held to celebrate the reemergence of the sun goddess, Amaterasu or Amaterasu, the sun goddess of Japanese mythology, from her seclusion in a cave. And the way the Japanese mythology works, tricked by the other gods with a loud celebration, then she peeks out to look and finds the image of herself in a mirror and is convinced by the other gods to return, which brings sunlight back to the universe. Requiems for the dead were held at Manzai, and Shishiyamai were performed throughout the night awaiting the sunrise. Aspects of this tradition survive on New Year's. So the Japanese tradition. In the Inca parts of South America, Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, there was a festival, Inti Raymi, the festival of the sun. It was a religious ceremony of the Inca Empire in honor of the sun god Inti. It also marked the winter solstice and a new year in the Andes of the southern hemisphere. One ceremony performed by the Inca priests was the tying of the sun. In Machu Picchu, there is still a large column of stone called an Intihuatana, meaning hitching post of the sun, or literally for tying the sun. And that ceremony to tie the sun to the stone was to prevent the sun from escaping. The Spanish conquest, they never found Machu Picchu, but they destroyed all the other columns, the other stone ceremonial buildings, and the Catholic Church managed to suppress all the Inti festivals and ceremonies by the mid-16th century. Oh, there's a surprise. All right, I got a little bit more on this, and then it's just fascinating when you start examining the significance of this festival. Of course, in the Northern Hemisphere, in the Southern Hemisphere, this is the longest day of the year. But in the Northern Hemisphere, the significance of and the power of this day, this night, is remarkable.
The Truth Speaker, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Northern South America, Japan, Northern Europe. Also, the Hellenistic period in Greece, in the Aegean civilizations, the exclusively female winter ritual, Lanaia, or it's spelled a couple of different ways. Lanaia, I believe, is the way it's pronounced, was the festival of the wild woman. In the forest, a man or a bull representing the god Dionysus was torn to pieces and eaten by Maenads, a Greek goddess. Later in the ritual, a baby representing Dionysus reborn, there it is again, was presented. The Nion, the first month of the Delian calendar, derived its name from the festival's name. And by classical times, the human sacrifice had been replaced by that of a goat, and the woman's role had changed to that of funeral mourners and observers of the birth. Wine miracles were performed by the priests, get this, in which priests would seal water in a room overnight, and the next day it would have turned into wine. If I remember, that was the mythical Jesus's first miracle. This miracle was said to have been performed by Dionysus and the Linnaeans. And by the 5th century, before the Common Era, the ritual had become a festival for theatrical competitions, often held in Athens. What else? Celtic midwinter. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. It is the term, and again, I won't even try the Celtic. It's a name sometimes used by hypothetical midwinter rituals or celebrations in the proto-Celtic tribes, the Celts and later the Druids. In Ireland's calendars, the solstices and equinoxes all occur at about midpoint in each season. The passage and chamber of Newgrange, that's the one I mentioned earlier, probably built around 3,200 years before the Common Era, is a tomb in Ireland, and it's illuminated by the winter solstice sunrise. A shaft of sunlight shines through the roof box over the entrance and penetrates the passage to light up the chamber. This event lasts for 17 minutes at dawn from the 19th to the 23rd of December. The point of roughness is the term for the winter solstice in Wales. Point of roughness, which in ancient Welsh mythology was when Rhiannon gave birth to the sacred sun, Pryderi, sacred sun, S-O-N. My, it all kind of laps and overlaps, doesn't it? In Wicca, Yule is observed as one of eight solar holidays, or Sabbat. In most Wiccan groups or covens, Yule marks the rebirth of the great god in the form of the solstice sun. Although the name Yule may have been appropriated from Germanic and Norse paganism, elements of the celebration are of modern origin. The root of the celebration is the northern Eurasian Indo-European celebration of the birth of Odin. It was a time of great fires and festivities. St. Patrick seemed to not be concerned that Irish Druidism and Christianity were mirrors of each other. The sun, Eshuin, was central to the Celtic religion because all life and existence relies on it, and the pursuit of the setting and rising sun were of great interest. In Irish legend, the sun, Eshuin, is born as one of a trinity. The other two are killed by Balor, their grandfather Winter. It marks the turning of the year and the beginning of a new cycle. The Odin rises to power in spring and is the sun, S-O-N, upon marrying the earth. The earth is referred to as Britta, Brigitta, Bridget, or Brigantia. All these religious belief systems, and yet there are people in this country, in this time, in this society who insist that all of this is garbage. It's all garbage. And the only real event around December 25th that has any meaning whatsoever is the mythological story, the myth of the mythological birth of a mythological son, S-O-N, of God, in a desert someplace in the middle of winter, while little lambs who could not have been born at that time of the year were gamboling around while the three wise men came. I don't know, man. You listen to stuff, you take your pick, or just enjoy all of it.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour, and again, this hour is brought to you by George and Karen in Oregon. Their message, Happy Solstice, America, from George and Karen in Oregon. A special hello from your most loyal four-legged fan, Maggie, the world-famous therapy cat. We're talking about the winter solstice because we moderns have become so divorced from, ripped away from, really significant historical, celestial, earth-bound events. We don't know anymore. Everything has been sort of faked up and changed and plasticized and. I don't know how much you dwell on that reality. I guess I don't very much, but when I do, it's really appalling to think what we consider to be our own life cycle at this point. Now, I realize the cynic will say, well, Malloy, you know, the life expectancy in Neolithic times or when these traditions began was probably 38 years. Life expectancy now is anywhere from 70 to 85. What's your complaint? It's not the quantity so much as the quality. And life expectancy figures are based on infant mortality more than anything else. They're not based on how old people live. Didn't Socrates live into his 80s? You can find historical figures who lived to be old men, old women. But life expectancy is an averaging. So if you had 100 people in the village and 50 of them died before their first birthday from typhoid or from lack of nutrition, and the other 50 lived to be 100, then the average life expectancy in that village was 50. You see, you know how that works. So, anyway, the traditions of the summer and winter solstice are traditions that they are these circadian rhythms inside human beings that we're not even aware of. Our bodies, I think, still respond, and it makes no difference if the human we're talking about is from Asia, South America, Europe, North America. It really doesn't matter. Those rhythms are in there, and to deny them or to try to ignore them is to deny and or ignore a very essential part of who we are. And sometimes I think that's the problem, you know, right? We have cut ourselves off, literally cut ourselves off from knowledge. And it's just a bloody shame. I you know, I'm certainly have never sat down and had a long talk with a Celtic priest, or although I have had that kind of conversation with Wiccans, but I've never had, you know, a channel through which I could make all kinds of discoveries because someone was there to guide me. It's always, you know, just kind of curiosity on my own, which is probably the way you've done it. But it just seems to me that an acknowledgement of these rhythms and cycles and these turnings and changings would help us. Ancient Mesopotamia, Samaria, Babylonia, they adapted the Egyptian Osiris celebrations. The Babylonians held the annual renewal or New Year celebration. They called it the Zagmuk festival. It lasted 10 days, overlapping the winter solstice. It was a festival held in observation of the sun god's battle over darkness. Notice all these references to Christianity, or Christianity's references to these ancient religions and traditions. The Babylonians held land and river parades. Masters and slaves interchanged, a reversal. A mock king was crowned, and masquerades clogged the streets. This has been a suggested precursor to the festival of Kronos, Saturnalia, and possibly the ancient Hebrew holiday of Purim. And then Saturnalia itself, originally celebrated by the ancient Greeks as Cronia, the festival of Cronus. Saturnalia was the feast at which the Romans commemorated dedication of the Temple of Saturn, which originally took place on 17 December, but expanded to a whole week up to 23 December. It was a very important public festival in Rome, involved the conventional sacrifices, a couch set in front of the Temple of Saturn, and the untying of the ropes that bound the statue of Saturn during the rest of the year. Besides the public rites, there were a series of holidays and customs celebrated privately. There were school holidays. Slaves were exempt from punishment, treated their masters with disrespect. This was part of the compensation for being a slave. Saturnalia became one of the most popular Roman festivals, which led to more tomfoolery, marked chiefly by having masters and slaves ostensibly switch places. In Greek and Cypriot folklore, it was believed that children born during the festival were in danger of turning into Kalikanzorai, which came out of the earth, creatures that came out of the earth after the solstice to cause trouble for mortals. And on and on. It just doesn't stop if you ever want to have a very entertaining afternoon. I think I have time. Do we have some music from Bridget? Bridget's music? Do we have anything that this is not her? Bridget Speaks, but it might as well be. Winter Solstice 2010, or Kyr Nunos. Kyr Nunos. This year, the winter solstice approaches not with fairies riding downy flakes to perch on fir trees and holly bushes. This year, the turning of the year comes creeping through fog, wrapping trees, deer, and time itself in a muffled blanket. The silence is so dense I can't hear my footsteps, and I understand what it is like to be lost in the universe. I walk through the alien gray landscape, searching for the place I have in mind for building the Yule fire tonight. I want to lay the stones for the fire ring and get the wood in place while there is still daylight, but in this fog, the path I seek eludes me. A holly bush peaks pointed leaves toward me, crimson berries offering a moment of colored relief, and I pause to honor the Holly King whose reign is about to end. Perhaps it's my momentary honoring of the Holly King's presence. Maybe by stopping to acknowledge the cycles of life, I've brought myself in harmony with the shifting energies around me and found my way into the wildwood. In any case, the fog thins for a moment and the pathway is clear before me. The clearing I seek is just ahead. As I approach, I feel a presence and take my eyes off the path. He stands in the swirling mists, an ethereal vision, antlers reaching for the sky as his ears turn toward me and his muscles tense, ready to flee. I know this stag, and he knows me, so I greet him, my voice soft as the fog, hoping he will recognize me and know there is no danger. I named him Cedar a few years ago because he rubs the moss off his new antlers in the summer on a cedar tree. Although he has come many times to eat grain from the bowls I put out for his clan, today as he stands proudly in the mist, he is not Cedar. I've come face to face with Kyr Nunos, Lord of the Wildwood and guardian of the portal to the other world. Kyr Nunos is the great symbol of life feeding life. As the stag, he is the hunted. As Lord of the Forest, he leads the hunt. He is born at the winter solstice and appears in spring as the budding young son of the goddess, then becomes her consort in the warmth of summer as life explodes everywhere around them. He gives his vibrant life to the earth and leads the autumnal journey to the underworld and returns to the earth from which he was born. Seeds of light released from his decaying body quicken Earth Mother's womb with a new sun once again, and he is reborn at the winter solstice. As the sun stands still at its furthest point from us in the northern hemisphere and begins its return, Kyr Nunos emerges from the travels underground, signaling the continuation of the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. I'm honored with his presence. For only a moment, the mists thicken and obscure my view, and when I can see again, the stag has melted into the forest. This has been a foreshadowing. The seeds that will sprout into new life still slumber deep in the ground, and it will be months before their green hearts emerge into the light. But the stag's spirit now wanders the woods again, and I know, because I trust the cycles of nature, that where the stag's hoofs walk, the green will return. With love, Bridget. Thank you.
It's More Mike Malone. You don't have to. It's More Mike Malone.
That was pretty interesting. It's 10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by George and Karen in Oregon. Happy Solstice, America, from the two of them. Special hello from your most loyal four-legged fan, Maggie, the world-famous therapy cat from George and Karen in Oregon. Thanks, folks. Appreciate it. email from Mark in Fallbrook, California. Mike, your comments the other night about Halliburton and the cement, what he's referring to is in the big-ass civil suit filed by the Justice Department against 10 or 12 contractors who brought us the Gulf oil disaster this year. Halliburton was left off, the people who formulated the cement and poured the cement that cracked and caused the event to begin with. Anyway, Mark writes, Mike, your comments about Halliburton and cement caused me to flash back to my tour in Vietnam, 1971 to 72. The Navy base at which I was stationed was next door to a cement plant operated by, guess who? Well, no, not Halliburton, but rather its former subsidiary, Kellogg Brown and Root. Rumor had it that KBR was paying protection money to the Viet Cong so that KBR facilities, and there were many in Vietnam, would not be attacked. The rumor seemed to be true because the Army base south of us and the Air Force base north of us were regularly mortared and attacked by VC forces. But in the year I was there, not one attack on our base. Another example of Halliburton and its subsidiaries getting a free pass. Mark in Fallbrook. anything connected to Dick Cheney is filthy, vile, fraudulent, immoral, unethical, and eventually illegal. Cheney right now, the lawyers for Halliburton are trying to buy his ass out of prosecution by the government of Nigeria. There have been very few American politicians or American figures who have been so destructive to the entire planet than Dick Cheney and his spawn. It's vile. But there's not a whole lot you can do about it, is there? I've been following, I don't know if you have, these freaks who are insisting that on May 21st, Jesus is going to come back. In the Raleigh News and Observer newspaper today, they had a picture of this woman. According to the caption underneath the picture, she's 29 years old. Allison Warden from her Subaru, a car painted as white as a fourth horse of Revelation. Allison Warden proclaims that Jesus Christ shall return May 21st, as in 151 days from now. By her reckoning, the Lord's return will fall on a springtime Saturday. And if the world weren't ending, you might find people celebrating other notable highlights of the day, Mr. T's birthday, Montenegro's independence, or the Red Sox-White Sox game. But to Miss Warden and hundreds of like-minded Christians, Judgment Day can be calculated precisely by tracing biblical genealogy or by following history forward 7,000 years from the day Noah shut the door on his ark. Miss Warden, 29, says, it's a very jarring thing to be told you have 5 months on Earth. That may interrupt any earthly plan. Allison, according to the newspaper, is well-spoken and bespeckled. She isn't a wild-eyed soothsayer stalking the sidewalks under a sandwich board screaming that the end is nigh. She doesn't handle snakes or flagellate herself, but she bears news of the impending rapture with spooky calm, delivering her warning of the looming apocalypse in the matter-of-fact tone you might use to announce a sale at Kmart. Now, at times, it sounds like she's hedging her bets. Allison says, quote, I have a day job. She's an office manager for a door company. I'm not giving up my day job. I have bills to pay. I'm going to keep paying them. People say, why don't you quit working and run up your credit card? Well, the Bible doesn't tell you to do that. But the jarring news is that Miss Warden doesn't believe you can do much to prepare. She preaches predestination, which essentially means that God did his picking before any of us were born. You can cry out for mercy, she says, but it ain't gonna happen! So, if you're on the left behind list, get ready for some real disappointment, because 5 months after the believers vanish into the sky on October 21st, the entire planet will be engulfed in the cleansing fires of heaven. Poof. Miss Warden doesn't see that as a negative message. She says, we like to be in control of our lives. I found it quite relieving. God is saving more people now than any time in history. Ew. She may be making the most attention-getting end times prediction now going, but it's hardly the first. In the year 1000, hysteria over Jesus' return so captivated medieval society that crops went unplanted and criminals were freed from jails. Oh, my. You know, I just wonder what happens now on May 22nd. If on May 21st, this crazy, crazy stuff that these people believe in doesn't happen. Everybody who is blessed and born again and saturated in the blood of the sacrificial lamb, their clothes shall fall off of them and they will be naked and they'll rise. Everybody rising, flying up, all these nude bodies flying up into heaven. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Men, are you?
It is 7 past the hour, and this hour is sponsored by, sponsored by Matthew Maffei. His message, progressive democratic activist.blogspot.com, progressive democratic activist. .blogspot.com. Political satire, humor, and some sanity from one man's perspective. Get up, get active, make something happen. Happy birthday, sis! From Matt. Matthew Maffei is our sponsor this hour. Thanks, Matt. I was watching Chris Hayes tonight. He is filling in for Keith Olbermann this week. And he was interviewing one of the first responders after the attack on September 11th, 2001. A big guy who was a firefighter. and is dying. I should say is struggling to stay alive. His what he had to say was pretty moving at one point. You know, when you see somebody who, he sounded like maybe he was from, I don't know, Queens, possibly Staten Island, a big New York firefighter. And Chris Hayes asked him to just tell, in his opinion, how he feels about the first responders health benefits bill. It's referred to as the Zadroga bill. It was named after James Zadroga, a responder who was killed in 2006 by respiratory disease. Anyway, this health fund, this money, is to be appropriated to monitor and treat the health of the firefighters and police officers and construction workers who did so much on September 11th and immediately after in that charnel house that had been the World Trade Center towers. And, of course, the Bush administration lied through their goddamn teeth about the safety of going into that area. Eventually, I think people will, or history will describe the Bush crime family precisely for what it was. Criminals of the highest order and slimy, sneaky criminals, not up front like Stalin or Pol Pot or Hitler or Mao, but just filthy sons of bitchin' sneaks. But criminals nonetheless. So the Victims' Compensation Fund was set up for the people who lost family members in the collapse of the trade towers, and to open the Victims' Compensation Fund and to include in it this health aspect for the first responders seems like the moral thing to do. And as everybody has pointed out, these are not New Yorkers. I mean, it wasn't New York that was attacked. It wasn't New Yorkers who died. It wasn't New Yorkers who tried to rescue the people who were injured and dying and dead. This was an attack on America, engineered by the Bush crime family. And it was an attack on all of us. And the first responders came from all over the country to try to help. And now these filthy, degenerate Republicans in Congress, just the lowest slime. This is the kind of stuff you scrape off the bottom of your foot after you've walked through, some gutter because the sidewalk was blocked and you get to the other side of the barricade and you notice this schmeck on the bottom of your foot and you scrape it off. That's what these Republican filth really are. When this was initially filibustered, no Republican senator came to the floor to explain why the bill, which was fully paid for, this is not added to the deficit. It doesn't require a tax increase. It's my understanding one of the ways it's going to be paid for is with a tax or a fee on foreign companies that do business with the U.S. government. Is that right? But these filthy goddamn Republicans, there is no reason for this not to go through except for one. This is something that Obama has been pushing. These pigs, like this piece of filth, Tom Coburn, another one of these monsters, these grave diggers, these flesh eaters. Where's he from? Oklahoma? And he's a physician? Are you kidding me? He apparently is one of the leaders resisting this. According to researchers at the Albert Einstein University Montefiore Medical Center in New York, the dust at the World Trade Center site was, quote, a combination of the most dense, intense particulate matter firefighters and EMS personnel were ever exposed to in an urban environment, end quote. A specialist in respiratory medicine explained to Voice of America that respiratory ailments arising from exposure to that dust results in, quote, a persistent, real decline that requires long-term monitoring and aggressive treatment, end quote. A report by the AFL-CIO in September of this year revealed that 13,000 first responders were still being treated for health problems 9 years after the attacks took place. Greg Staub, who retired from the New York City Fire Department in 2009 due to chronic lung problems, said, quote, "They told us if we did our job, they'd take care of us. We did our job. Now we're sick, and they don't remember who we are anymore." The guy that Chris Hayes had on tonight was talking about his daughters, and this is where this huge man started to tear up. He knows he's going to die. He doesn't know how to take care of things in the time he has left alive. And he was talking about that. He said, you know, he's been on unemployment because he can't work. The fire department tried to find him a desk job. They tried to find him this, tried to find him that. Everything became too strenuous. Unemployment ran out. Workman's comp, I guess, is what he's living on. And he was telling Chris Hayes that this bill, the passage of this bill, is so important to him to keep him alive long enough, the money to keep him alive, keep him in treatment. His health insurance is gone. To keep him in treatment so he can see his daughters grow at least into their teens, into their early 20s. And these filthy, disgusting, God-damned Republicans have fought this thing. Coburn got on television and lied through his teeth that there had been no hearings. There were hearings. Coburn just didn't show up. When Republicans weren't ignoring actual first responders, they were also offering nonsensical procedural reasons for opposing the bill. Senator John Kyle from Arizona, for example, said that the bill was being considered in a hurry, in a lame duck session, without a hearing, without understanding that the ramifications are and whether we can amend the bill. This bill was introduced in the House for the first time 4 years ago. It's been available in the Senate since 2009. It got a Senate hearing in June 2010. Former Republican and Congressman Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe on MSNBC, he asked, how did this become a New York issue? That's like Pearl Harbor becoming a Hawaiian issue. It's ridiculous. We'll be right back.
Ornaments we picked up recently. Here's one handed down from the 19th century. Some are homemade, some from far across the sea. Some gifts from friends, each one carries a story. Christmas tree, remind me of memories.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour, and this hour is brought to you by Matthew. He is at progressivedemocraticactivist.blogspot.com. Political satire, humor, and some sanity from one man's perspective. Get up, get active, make something happen. Happy birthday, sis, from Matthew Maffei. Thanks, Matt. Tom in Joshua Tree, California, wants to remind me, the guy that was on MSNBC tonight with Chris Hayes was not a firefighter. He's a union cement worker who responded to 9/11. He's been living on unemployment insurance, and when that's done, he's a dying man without the money or insurance. Another Christmas present from our Christian senators. So his story was so profoundly moving. When you see someone like that who did what he did, and now the Republicans are telling him, he's the one that John McCain, when he saw McCain this guy went to the Senate to listen to the hearings, I think, and he saw McCain in the off, in the hallway and said something to the effect of, you know, can you please do what you can to help us? And McCain said something to the effect, I can't help you, and turned away. Think Progress's Lee Fang reported, quote, while Republicans quietly snuffed out efforts to compensate these 9/11 people, they were aided by a quiet lobbying campaign by the powerful lobbying front, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Son of a bitch. I mean, how much longer do we put up with this? U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Apparently, the chamber didn't like that the bill was being paid for by closing a tax loophole used by multinational corporations who park their incomes in tax havens. The chamber warned that closing the loophole would, quote, damage U.S. relationships with major trading partners and aggravate already unsettled financial markets, end quote. The Chamber of Commerce, I wish I could talk violence on this program. If I were able to talk violence, I would suggest terrible, terrible, fiery retribution raining down from a metaphorical Vesuvius onto the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all of its piglets that do this sort of stuff. But, of course, I don't talk violence on the air for very obvious reasons. So it's not a fee on foreign corporations that pays for this. It's the closing of a tax loophole used by multinational corporations who hide, or as Think Progress says, park their income in tax havens. This is how Republicans and capitalists treat the first responders. Get your asses in there and repair the center of global capitalism, Wall Street. Repair it, fix it, get it going, breathe the stuff, shut your goddamn mouths, you're lucky to have a job. We were just attacked by the most vicious force on earth, the bunch of crazy goddamn Arabs, Muslims. And 9 years later, you see, the capitalists and the Chamber of Commerce and the corporations treat the first responders the same way they treat soldiers. Exactly the same thing. Exactly. Exactly the same thing. Go out there and make it safe for me, the capitalist, to move in and smash and pillage and loot anything I can get my filthy hands on. And if you're a soldier, sailor, Air Force, Marine, when you come home, please come home in a box. Please! So I don't have to deal with you! That's how capitalism looks at workers, soldiers, women, children, men, old people, young people, middle-aged people. And it's our system. The callous response of many Republican senators to these very real health concerns has been nothing short of appalling. For instance, Senator John Thune, a Republican of South Dakota, insisted that the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy were a higher priority than the Zadroga bill, the first responders bill. And here it is. In the Senate rotunda, Senator John McCain stepped around a first responder. This is a guy who was on Chris Hayes' program tonight, asking for his support, telling him, I can't help you. Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, called the Capitol Police when some first responders planned to stage a sit-in at Senate offices. This is what Republicans do. This is what capitalists do. And if you deny any of this, you're either insane or a goddamn fool, or, third choice, you love being treated like scum while you're alive on this planet. Which one is it, booby?
listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
There's that pagan song again. Before the hour. This hour is brought to you by Matt, who wishes his sister a happy birthday. He is the, he has a website or the blog spot, Progressive Democratic Activist. ProgressiveDemocraticActivist.blogspot.com. Political satire, humor, and some sanity from one man's perspective. Get up, get active, make something happen. Happy birthday, sis, Matt. From Matthew Maffei. Maffei? Thanks, Matt. A couple emails here. David in Flux writes, regarding Tom Coburn, Senator, doctor from Oklahoma, Coburn is not only blocking the 9/11 funding, he's also filibustering the aid money to Haiti. Hippocratic Oath, huh? First, do no harm, right, Tom? You filthy pig bastard, you. John in Butler, Maryland. Senator, subject line, Senator Coburn and his pals on this Droga bill. The Republicans in the Senate have become a death panel that is giving thumbs down to all of the 9/11 responders. And, from Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2, regarding paying for the 9/11 first responders, the original funding source was to be the closing of a loophole in corporate tax computation that allows foreign corporations to take dividends and interest income out of the U.S. completely tax-free. Of course, this includes thousands of alleged U.S. corporations that have post office boxes in the Cayman Islands as their corporate headquarters. Not alleged. I mean, real U.S. corporations that have P.O. boxes in the Cayman Islands as their corporate headquarters. And this is what raised the ire of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and the bill was filibustered. Like I said, it's a good thing I am prohibited from talking violence. There have been many nights when I've sat here and just wanted to pour the vitriol out on people and organizations who, by God, deserve it. There's so many organizations that are so corrupt and so filthy and so vile and so anti-life and anti-earth and anti-spirit and anti-everything that how can a thinking human being not want to burn them to the ground or turn them into dust or roll mighty waves of sand over them or have a volcano erupt and submerge them in molten lava? I mean, how can you not feel that way? Oh, well, if you're a Republican, you don't feel that way. You think it's those goddamn New Yorkers, they can take care of themselves, right, boys? According to the New York Times, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said on Saturday, a couple of days ago, that she and other sponsors of the stalled 9/11 health bill had won new Republican support for the measure and intended to try again to pass it before the end of the 111th Congress. Times says, following the Senate's vote to repeal the ban on gays serving the military, Ms. Gillibrand, Democrat in New York, said Democrats intended to resurrect the health initiative in the coming days after falling three votes short of breaking a filibuster against it earlier this month. You mean a filibuster threat? These filthy Republicans never really filibuster. They just don't. They just threaten, and that causes the Democrats, a lot of them, to run into the cloakroom and immediately urinate all over themselves. Oh, what are we going to do? Well, apparently, Kirsten Gillibrand is not one of those Democrats. I don't know her from Adam's house cat, but She said, we have the votes we need. We have indications from several Republicans that they very much want to vote for this bill. Ms. Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand, may I suggest that anytime a Republican tells you it's noon, it's not noon. It's 4:30 in the afternoon or 6 o'clock at night or midnight or 9 o'clock the next day, but it's not noon. They are lying sons of bitches, and they suck you into believing they're going to do something, and then they don't. So, Senator Gillibrand, I hope you don't find out that these bastards are going to push your face against the wall. Republicans, the Times says, have raised concerns about how to pay for the program, and Ms. Gillibrand said, why do they call her Ms. Gillibrand, and they refer to Senator Coburn? Doesn't the New York Times have a style book that they use that if somebody is a senator, whether they're male or female, they should be referred to as senator? Let me see here. Do they refer to Mr. Coburn or Senator? Well, I'll be damned. It's Senator. But here they refer to Ms. Gillibrand. Republicans have raised concerns, the Times says, about how to pay for the program, and Ms. Gillibrand said the bill's authors have identified ways to cover the costs through new federal fees that are acceptable to enough Republicans to advance the measure. It stalled on a party-line vote of 57-42 when 60 votes were required. Well, new federal fees, I guess she's referring to closing a tax loophole. I don't know. The bill, by the way, the James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act calls for providing $3.2 billion over the next 8 years. What is that, $400 million a year? To monitor and treat injuries stemming from exposure to toxic dust and debris at Ground Zero. New York City would pay 10% of the health costs. The bill also would set aside $4.2 billion to reopen the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund to provide payments for job and economic losses. This whole thing, of course, is courtesy of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and what's his name? Who was the Secretary of Defense? Rumsfeld. It's hard for me to remember his Nazi name. But they are the ones that allowed it to happen. It occurred on their watch. They had received daily briefings that said, as you know, Osama bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. This was a Bush crime family operation, one way or the other. These sons of bitches who should have been tried for treason, should have been tried for something, dereliction of duty, impeached, thrown out on their asses, convicted in the Senate, hanged for mass murder, something. But nothing happened. Bush got to stand on the debris for half an hour with a bullhorn. Bastards. Quick, do something else. Dear Mike and Kathy, here in San Francisco, the winter solstice begins at 3:28 p.m. today. I'm wishing you and yours the most bright season. Mine could have been brighter had the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell had not happened. I worry about this country of ours and its way of keeping the masses ignorant and asleep about so many things. I'm hoping my words below may help wake someone, our young people perhaps. Dear America and my sexual minority community, my name is Michael. Today is one of the saddest days of my life. The United States Senate voted to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, allowing my gay, lesbian, and bisexual brothers and sisters to serve openly in the armed forces of the United States of America. I really don't know if the repeal will allow transgender persons or intersexed persons to serve or not. Why are people rejoicing at the news? Today is one of the saddest days of my life. My name is Michael. In 1968, I volunteered for the draft. I didn't have to. I was exempt as a teacher. But my brain said I had to volunteer because it would prove that I was not a homosexual. The military did not allow homosexuals to serve. Only heterosexuals were considered normal and mentally sound in America. I served with the 101st Airborne. I did America's killing on the front lines in Vietnam. I didn't know at the time that my commander-in-chief was lying to the troops and nation about the Gulf of Tonkin incident, just as our Iraq troops and the nation didn't know that our commander-in-chief was lying about weapons of mass destruction. All we Americans are told is that we are protecting America. Who's America? Halliburton's? The oil companies? The banks? What about my America? What about the First Nation people, the First Nation people's America, African Americans' America, Latino Americans' America? All minorities have sent and continue to send their finest for an America that is never ours. We give our children over to an American military that oppresses people around the world and us here at home. I'm not equal to Coca-Cola or Dow Chemical. I came home, and with time, I came out. I'm a proud gay man who is writing this. I'm pleading with you, America, and my minority community and all minority communities to wake up. I came home from a brutal war, and that war never left me. I did America's killing because of the many lies told to me. Why are people rejoicing? Why, America? Signed, Michael Jobb, Veterans for Peace, San Francisco.
Gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior is born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
10 before the hour. And this hour is sponsored by Matthew Maffei, who wishes his sis a happy birthday and has a blog spot, Progressive Democratic Activist blogs.blogspot.com. Check him out. Progressive. I've been there. I've been to Matt's website. Progressive Democratic Activist .blogspot.com. Political satire, humor, and some sanity from one man's perspective, Matt writes. Get up, get active, make something happen. Happy birthday, sis. Signed, Matt. Thank you, Matt. Janine in Youngstown, Ohio writes, Mike, I wanted to comment on the James Zadroga bill providing funding for medical coverage for those first responders who were at Ground Zero on September 11, 2001. I noticed that Senator Tom Coburn, the Republican from Oklahoma, in his rotten, selfish way, was basically telling the first responders who are sick and dying due to breathing in toxic substances to just die already. Funny how he didn't respond to these first responders as he did to the elderly woman at his teabagger town hall meeting, who was pleading through her sobbing over how her severely ill husband will lose his health insurance, even though he has kidney disease, to, in so many words, go, he told her to go and mooch off her neighbor. Coburn did. The corporatists in government think it's important that we bail out the criminals on Wall Street who broke our economy, but they say to those Americans who put themselves at risk for others and who are sick as a result to go screw themselves. Another corporatist pig, whom no one has mentioned, although I don't know what his opinion is on this bill, is Scott Brown, Senator, Republican from Massachusetts, who is a state senator in the Massachusetts legislature, voted no on a bill that would have provided funding for those first responders from Massachusetts who responded on September 11th. It really isn't all that surprising since he authored the mediocre bill that seriously watered down regulations on the banking industry. I can't say I'm surprised by these amoral Republicans. Their actions are unconscionable, but after all, we are talking about Republicans. Janine in Youngstown, Ohio. Yow. We have another hour. Just looking through the stack here. Net neutrality. FCC approves net neutrality rules, but reform groups unsatisfied. Also, there was a Food Safety Act passed that some people whose opinions I respect are saying this Food Safety Act is a joke. Supporters of the Food Safety Act, which passed today in the House, it's already passed the Senate. Supporters, including Democrats and Republicans, hailed the measure as a landmark modernization of the nation's food safety system, one that gives the Food and Drug Administration greater authority over food products, whether they come from this country or imported from abroad. The vote included 10 Republicans supporting the measure. The bill is meant to change the mission of the FDA, allowing it to focus on preventing foodborne outbreaks rather than reacting after an outbreak occurs. But that's not what I'm getting here. I'm from Cat Mary in Memphis. I've been despondent, desolate, angry, helpless, losing my peacefulness, walking through the House screaming why the House today passed a fascist bill, the so-called FDA Food Modernization and Safety Act. The Senate sneaked it through in a late-night Sunday session after changing its number, then shunted it to the House, which passed it today. What it will do, more or less slowly and agonizingly, will be to destroy all natural and organic farms, dairies, ranches, and supplement enterprises, vitamins and the like, mostly through overregulation and bankruptcy and secret, yes, secret regulations that the FDA can impose at whim. It leaves us with nothing to eat but Monsanto's genetically engineered filth. It also turns food storage and distribution over to FEMA and the military during FDA-determined, quote, emergencies, end quote, making it very easy to kill undesirables by withholding food. FEMA's already had practice at it. All right, Cat Mary in Memphis, and I'm not sure exactly what I know this. First of all, I'm not sure exactly what the bill, this legislation, includes. If 10 Republicans signed on to it, it has to be bad. It has to be something sponsored by a manufactured food industry, the genetically modified food industry, the GMA or GM industry. I don't know. I know that Cat Mary gets very passionate about this stuff. So I'm sure she will probably send me some follow-up information. I am at a total loss. I thought it was unusual. I also know that thousands of people in this country are made sick, hundreds of thousands. Well, no. According to a new estimate, about 48 million people get sick and more than 3,000 die each year from food poisoning in the U.S., well, those are big numbers. They are lower than an earlier estimate of 76 million illnesses and 5,000 deaths a year that came from a 1999 study. Frequently cited by lawmakers and advocates seeking to pass new food safety legislation. The new numbers don't necessarily mean there is less food poisoning. They simply mean that scientists think they can now do a better job of guessing how many illnesses actually occur. I don't know, Cat Mary or somebody who knows more about this. It would be great if you send me some information. All right? All right, take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. We have miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. This is the winter solstice of 2010. This is a Malloy program, and this hour is sponsored by John Zweibel. Thank you, John. A couple more emails regarding the first responders and how the Republicans are treating them. Claude in New Jersey writes, Mike, what I don't understand is why the members of the Bush administration who declared the air safe to breathe, and Christy Whitman indicated that as head of the EPA she had been pressured to do so, why are they not being named and prosecuted? Where's the outrage? Where's the justice? Claude in New Jersey, it doesn't exist anymore, Claude, except in people like you or me, people who listen to this program. There's no there's no outrage. Why would there be outrage? We have become a nation of sheep. What's that line in the song? A nation of sheep led by a handful of pigs. Now, I think Prairie 2 has cleared up the confusion that I was feeling, maybe you were, about how the first responders bill is going to be paid for in order to get the Republicans to sign on to it. Okay, so here you go. Prairie 2 writes, the Associated Press reports the pay mechanism for funding health care for the 9/11 responders has been changed to appease Republicans who branded the original bill for 9/11 responders as something that included a, quote, corporate tax increase, end quote. Instead of closing a tax loophole, the bill will now use fees on, quote, foreign firms that get U.S. government procurement contracts, fees on certain firms that rely on H-1B and L-1 visas, and fees on travelers who don't present visa travel documents at U.S. airports, end quote, to finance the bill. They don't say how this will be divided up, but you can bet it'll depend heavily on travelers and not corporations. Son of a bitch. See, in order to get relief for the first responders, this is how the capitalists work. This is how they're pigs. There's filth in Congress, the Republicans. This is how they work. In order to get relief for the first responders, the pigs demand that the original idea of closing corporate tax loopholes not be included in the bill. And they say, if you include it, we won't vote for it. So they hold these thousands of first responders hostage. And the Democrats give in. Now, a lot of people will say, well, what do you expect, Mike? The Democrats have to give in because they're concerned with the first responders. The Republicans are concerned with corporate tax loopholes. That's true. But if I were able to talk about violence, my approach would be entirely different. You ever see these videos that wind up on YouTube or on the evening news sometimes where you have a courtroom scene and somebody is standing in the dock and they're being pronounced guilty of some heinous crime? And because their attitude is so bad while they're being pronounced guilty, it's usually members of the victim's family who erupt out of the gallery and start beating the living daylights out of the now convicted defendant, you know, until the bailiffs move in and the deputies move in and pull everybody apart. But it happens. That sort of thing happens. I can see myself sitting in a hearing room where Republicans are talking about this very thing we're talking about tonight and erupting. My, erupting with just uncontrollable violence and rage. And then, being set upon by the Capitol Hill police and charged with assault or assault with intent to commit terrible, terrible things to Republicans and wind up in jail. You know? I don't have the control. That's why I keep myself in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. Because if I venture out and run into a Republican. Speaking of the Food Safety Act, here's a little bit for you from Mike Ludwig at Truthout. This is according to WikiLeaks. More WikiLeaks stuff. The former United States ambassador to France suggested retaliating against France and the European Union in late 2007 in order to fight a French ban on Monsanto's genetically modified corn and changes that were written into European policy toward biotech crops. That's according to a cable released by WikiLeaks on Sunday. Former Ambassador Craig Stapleton was concerned about France's decision to suspend cultivation of Monsanto's MON810 corn. And our ambassador, this pig, appointed by Bush, this filthy pig, Craig Stapleton, was concerned about this. And in a memo, he wrote, quote, country team Paris recommends that we calibrate a target retaliation list that causes pain across the EU, since this is a collective responsibility. Listen to this son of a bitch. But that also focuses in part on the worst culprits. End quote. You got that? Punish France because France doesn't want this genetically modified crap and the stomachs of its citizens and the blood supply and the hearts and the livers and the brain cells. They just say no, as do most of the European Union. So this filth, this piece of human waste, who, by the way, Bush appointed Stapleton as ambassador to France in 2005. In 2009, Stapleton left the office and became the owner of the St. Louis Cardinals baseball team. Monsanto, of course, is based in St. Louis. It is not clear, according to Truthout, if Stapleton's retaliation scheme was ever implemented. Stapleton also wrote, quote, in our view, Europe is moving backwards, not forwards, on this issue, with France playing a leading role, along with Austria, Italy, and even the European Commission. Moving to retaliation will make clear that the current path has real costs to EU interests and could help strengthen European pro-biotech voices, end quote. MON 810 is a corn engineered to excrete the BT toxin, which is poisonous to some insect pests. A stacked version of MON 810 is also engineered to be resistant to glyphosate, an herbicide first popularized by Monsanto under the brand name Roundup. The debate in France over Monsanto's modified products has grown ugly in recent years. A recent Truthout report detailed the story of Dr. Gilles-Éric Seralini, a scientist, University of Caen in France. Seralini's supporters claim the scientist has faced intimidation from within the French scientific community after he published several studies showing Monsanto corn posed risks to human health.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This hour is brought to you by John Zweibel. Thanks, John. Regarding the food safety bill that Cap Mary wrote to me about, that has me very upset. I'm getting some information here from both Prairie 2 and Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. So let me just pass this on to Cap Mary and anyone else who's concerned about this. Michael in Roswell writes, last I heard was that the food bill had been modified to exempt small producers in some crucial ways to protect small organic farms. However, if your correspondent, that would be Cap Mary, says the number of the bill was changed and voted on immediately, perhaps the new number indicates the original bill without the protective amendments. I suppose I'll have to dig it out of the congressional record and read the damn thing as passed. The odd thing is that the amended bill left meat and dairy production to the U.S. Department of Agriculture and will let the USDA continue to write its own rules on inspections. And tainted spinach notwithstanding, most of the food poisoning has come from meat. The bill may make it more difficult for tainted processed foods from overseas to enter the system, such as the baby formula and pet food with the ground-up melamine in it coming in from China. But if it's written in such a way that it fosters even larger, more powerful agribusiness and drives more small producers out of business, that's not good. Guess I should read the bill and find out. I'll let you know. And then Prairie 2 writes, the bill had to be reissued with a new number, as the original Senate bill had tax provisions that must originate in the House and was ruled unconstitutional by the House parliamentarian. This version was built on a shell of an existing House bill that was languishing in the Senate, as over 200 progressive bills are. According to Tom Harkin, Liberal Democrat of Iowa, producers who sell less than $500,000 a year, is that what that means, Prairie 2, are exempt from regulations. Well, like Michael said, it might be better to read the damn thing instead of all of us sitting here trying to guess. Right? Okay. We'll certainly keep you posted. The other night, there was something I had brought up on the air that I had picked up from some news source that top U.S. military commanders are considering launching raids into Pakistan, ground raids, ground SEALs or special ops people, you know, not foreign contractors, not drone strikes, but actual U.S. military. This is kind of like the Laos situation during the Vietnam War, right? And the reason for launching these elite ground troops into Pakistan would be to try to capture or kill militants along the border with Afghanistan. NATO today denied that report. Oh, it was in the New York Times. Unidentified U.S. officials in Washington and Kabul described the proposal to the New York Times, saying it's still under consideration and will likely have to be approved by President Barack Obama. It would involve small units of special operations troops and could yield a windfall of intelligence data if suspects are captured and brought back to Afghanistan for interrogation. Now, that's according to the story published online last night. In Kabul today, NATO's Deputy Chief of Communications, U.S. Rear Admiral Gregory Smith, told the Associated Press that the whole story is false. Admiral Smith said, quote, there's absolutely no truth to reporting in the New York Times that U.S. forces are planning to conduct ground operations into Pakistan, end quote. Well, there you go. The ground operations are probably already underway. Anytime the United States military sends in a rear admiral to deny a story involving special operations that are supposed to be secret, you know that the story is true. In the Times story, officials describe feeling a new sense of urgency in Afghanistan after Obama's recent policy review held fast to a July 2011 deadline for the beginning of a drawdown of U.S. troops. The special ops raids could be one way to boost regional security more quickly. But, no, according to Rear Admiral Gregory Smith, NATO's Deputy Chief of Communications and a United States military officer, the story is not true. So there is your proof that it is true. We will be sending special ops troops into another country to kidnap and kill.
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This is the Malloy program, of course. I think tomorrow night, Wednesday night, I think tomorrow night, we are going to do podcast trivia because Thursday night is the winter solstice celebration program, which takes the place of the Christmas program we used to do. And Friday night will be off. So we'll do that tomorrow night. And this hour tonight is sponsored by John Zweibel. Thanks, John. Not only the food bill has me a little perplexed because I'm not sure yet how to read this. I mean, get a read on it. How to, you know, I can do like Michael and Roswell, and thank God he's doing it, but I could go get the bill itself and see what it says. Although it's almost impossible for me to read that kind of writing. I know it's in every book and every library in the world. Say, what's that? Say words. That's how I feel sometimes. The other story or legislation I'm really having some problems with here is the net neutrality rules that the FCC just approved. It's not legislation, it's FCC. In a 3-2 vote, the FCC approved net neutrality regulations. See, that's a contradiction in terms. How can you have regulations if you have net neutrality? If you don't know what that means, it just means the internet as it is would remain as it is if net neutrality were the objective and the outcome of this bill. But if you add the word regulations, all of a sudden, you say, Jesus God, I'm so sick of it. Anyway, in a 3-2 vote today, the FCC approved net neutrality regulations that will ensure cable companies provide consumers with equal access to legal websites and content. Uh-oh. The rules are less stringent for wireless network providers like AT&T and Verizon, allowing them to block applications and services that do not directly compete with them. That too. You don't have to send me a bunch of stuff right now. We're just going to have to see how it shakes out. But both of these have me completely perplexed. I'm going to have to call Hartman. See what Tom's got to say. Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld and yada, yada, yada. A lot of people think that Larry David personifies the worst of wealthy white people. And, maybe he does. I don't know. But I sure liked watching Seinfeld for the nothingness of it. That's what television is supposed to be. I think Larry David figured that out. Television is about nothing. It's just nothing. And that's what made Seinfeld so appealing to me. You didn't have to pay attention to every episode. It was just nothing. It was just, nothing. Curb Your Enthusiasm, pretty much the same. It almost jumped the shark a couple of years ago when they brought all these plot lines into it. But anyway, Larry David, he wrote an op-ed today in the Times, thanks for the tax cut. He writes, "There is a God." It passed. The Bush tax cuts have been extended 2 years for the upper bracketeers, of which I am a proud member. Thank you very much. I'm the last person in the world I want to be beside, but I am beside myself. This is a life changer, I tell you, a life changer. To begin with, I was planning a trip to Cabo with my kids for Christmas vacation. We were going to fly coach, but now with the money I'm saving in taxes, I'm going to splurge and bump myself up to first class. First class! Somebody told me they serve warm nuts up there and call you mister. I might not get off the plane. I'm also going to call the hotel and get another room so I don't have to sleep on a cot in the kids' room. Don't get me wrong, I love a good cot. The problem is they tend to take up a lot of room, and it's getting a little tougher in my advancing years to fold it up and drag it to the closet. I mean, I'd do it if I had to, but guess what? I don't! Not with this windfall coming my way. Now I get to have my own room with a king-size bed, and who knows, maybe I'll even get some fancy bottled water from the minibar. This is shaping up to be the best vacation I've had in years. When I get home, thanks to the Great Compromise, the first thing I'm going to do is get a flat-screen TV. Finally, I can throw out my 20-inch Zenith with the rabbit ears, the one I inherited from my parents when they died. The reception is terrible, and I'm getting tired of going out to bars every time I want to watch a game. Last month, the antenna broke, and I tried to improvise one with a metal hanger and wound up cutting myself. Every time I see that scab, I say to myself, if, God willing, those Bush tax cuts are restored, I'm going to buy a new TV. Well, guess what? They have been! It's also going to be a boon for my health. After years of coveting them, I'm finally able to afford blueberries. Did you know they have a lot of antioxidants which prevent cancer? Cancer! This tax cut just might save my life. Who said Republicans don't support health care? I'm going to have the blueberries with my cereal. And I'm not talking Special K. Those days are over. It's nothing but real granola from now on. The kind you get in the plastic bins in health food stores. Did someone say organic? The only problem is if, God forbid, the tax cuts are repealed in 2 years, how will I ever go back to Special K and bananas? Well, I did quit smoking, so I'm sure if push came to shove, I could summon up the willpower to get off granola and blueberries. Of course, I suppose with the money I managed to save from the Seinfeld syndication, I probably could continue to eat granola with blueberries. But let's hope it doesn't come to that. Life was good, and now it's even better. Thank you, Republicans! And a special thank you to President Obama and the Democrats. I didn't know you cared. Larry David. Yeah, there's a lot of multi-millionaire billionaires around the planet, around America, who are just celebrating their asses off tonight, you know? Cynthia in San Jose, California. I know organizing the left is like herding cats, but sometimes I get as mad at some of the people on the so-called left as I do the blanks on the right. I want Obama to succeed and have a great presidency, but he isn't going to have that with all the caving into the right and all the, and the tax deal last week was a cave-in as far as I'm concerned. Yes, it gave a desperately needed extension to the unemployed, and that was good, but it didn't cure the disease this country suffers from. The disease is the uber super uber rich corrupting the political process for their psychopathic greed, and they need to be taken down. If America is ever going to shine again, we need to put back a top tax rate of 91% and enforce it. Woo! You go, Cynthia. Back to our email. But some people on the left attack people like me for criticizing Obama for caving on that, sanctimoniously claiming that people like me are ideologues more interested in ideological purity than in getting things done, and that really makes me want to scream at them! It is insulting, and I have had it with that crap. The country's heading for a cliff, and this tax deal only speeds up the car, and I'm screaming, stop! The tax deal just tuned up the engine so the car can go faster toward the cliff. The tax deal created a symptom, but it didn't cure the disease. Treated a symptom, but it didn't cure the disease. The patient's going to die! And I am ideologically pure. I just want to turn the car around from going off the cliff. I just want to keep the patient from dying. I am thrilled to give Obama credit where credit is due, but I'm also going to criticize where it is needed. And I think some serious criticism and debate is needed, not a blind eye or shut up and fall in line, Cynthia, San Jose. Cynthia has this wonderful ability to just take several metaphors and just completely... It's like that. Remember Shake and Bake? Did you ever eat that, Kathy? Shake and Bake? Take a big old raw chicken leg and put it in one of those bags. And that's what Cynthia does with metaphors. I love it, Cynthia. I love it. Thanks for writing, dear heart. That's great. Cynthia is going to lead me to where I need to go. There's no question about that. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. You only have about another 10 minutes of this to put up with. Her silk pantyhose, walking around in women's underwear. In the store, there's a teddy with little straps like spaghetti. It holds me so tight, like handcuffs at night.
There's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown.
He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man. Let's wait until the wife is out of town. Later on, if you...
Ten before the hour, this is the Molloy Program. This hour has been sponsored by John Zweibel. Thank you, John. I do appreciate it. Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour responded today to an avalanche of criticism over remarks he made to the Weekly Standard about the civil rights movement. In a statement issued through his office, Haley Barbour, governor of Mississippi, former head of the Republican National Committee, stressed that the civil rights era in Mississippi was a difficult and painful era. He also withdrew the praise he had put out there for a local branch of the all-white pro-segregation citizens' councils, which he had credited with preventing racial strife in his hometown of Yazoo City, Mississippi. See, back in them days, the white citizens' council, well, they didn't have the word white out there for public consumption, but the citizens' council just let the people down in the quarters know that if any of them stuck their head on the north side of the railroad tracks, they'd get it blowed off. God damn it, that's one way to keep a peace for the niggers, right? Of course, over there in Philadelphia, Mississippi, we had them three. A couple of them were Jews, and the other one was the nigger come down here and tried to register voters. And of course, they had to be dealt with. I mean, we had our way of life down here. I mean, damn. These liberal websites are just all over my fat ass. Just because I had such a warm and fuzzy recollection of the civil rights here in my hometown, I don't remember it being as bad as everybody claimed. You know, I went to a speech by Martin Luther King Jr. while I was in high school, and you know, there was other races there. Yeah, sure was. But I'm thinking about running for president in 2012. You know, the South, we picked up a whole bunch more population. Hell, over in Texas, they picked up enough people, they're going to have four more congressional seats. Isn't that a bitch? Can you believe that? Oh, I'll tell you what. And the Citizens Council in Yazoo City, hell, that wasn't a racist organization. Had to keep a peace. I mean, what did y'all expect us to do? Huh? You heard of the citizens' councils. You know, up north, they think that was like the KKK. Where I come from, it was the organization of town leaders. That's what it was. We were town leaders. Well, not me, you know. But in Yazoo City, they passed a resolution that said anybody who started a chapter of the Klan would get their ass run out of town. Now, here's the truth. Truth is, them some bitches was competing with us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you got the Citizens Council here and we're trying to get members and collect dues, and you got the Klan over there, and, you know, they're trying to get members and collect dues. I mean, well, what do you expect? Something had to give. So we just told them boys, hey, if you got a job, you're in the Klan, you're going to lose it. If you got a store, we're going to make sure nobody shops there if you're in the Klan. Yeah, we didn't have a problem with the Klan in Yazoo City. No, there wasn't no Klan. But there was us. Now, I'm not a racist. All I said when I was asked why my hometown, Mississippi, didn't suffer the same racial violence when I was a young man that other towns had to deal with when the niggers tried to get to vote and go to the movie theater and everything, I accurately said the community leadership wouldn't tolerate it and help prevent violence in Yazoo City. My point was, my town rejected the KKK, but nobody should construe that to mean I think the town leadership were saints either. It was a difficult and painful era for Mississippi and the rest of the country, especially the African-Americans who were persecuted at the time, you know. But we're here in Yazoo City. No, I don't know why all these liberals, these self-hating white folks, are just making such a big deal about what I said. I mean, goddamn, what do y'all want? Here, wait a minute. Let me shift this char red man over. There we go. We have no trouble in Yazoo City. Nope. We just made it real plain to everybody what would happen if there's trouble. Oh, damn.
I remember them days. It wasn't so bad. I mean, Jesus Christ, old Ronald Reagan himself came down there to Philadelphia, Mississippi to open up his campaign, run for president. Y'all don't remember that? You think Reagan would have come someplace where, you know, the Negroes weren't treated good? Please, he was a Hollywood movie star. They all hang out together out there. I know about Hollywood, you know. So I just want to let everybody know. My name's Haley Barber. And I grew up in Yazoo City, Mississippi. We didn't have no trouble down there. Not even a little bit. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truckers.